the Patriots, written by Sanna Krasikov and read by Rebecca Crankshaw.
For T. Friedman. Prologue. Saratov, 1956. On a Sunday in August, a boy and a one-armed man appeared on the platform of the Saratov train station. The train they awaited was due to arrive at 6. In that early evening hour, the air was beginning to cool. The sunlight shifted, deepened, and turned to gold the dust suspended by the shoes of hurrying passengers. Leading the way through milling crowds, the man drew a hand-rolled cigarette from his jacket and gripped it between his teeth. He worked a match out of a box with his one hand, struck it up with the flesh of his thumb, and leaned down on the flame. Sucking his cigarette, he glanced back to see that the boy had not been swallowed up by the masses. All summer had found the railway stations mobbed as they hadn't been since the war. To contain the stench of public toilets, the sanitation workers poured bleach powder in the latrine pits. The man forbade the boy to go alone into one of these facilities, knowing they were full of urki, ready to slit your throat for the money you carried in your underwear. A wave of crime had hit the cities 2 years prior. For the first of the condemned to be let out were their pickpockets and prostitutes, the murderers, thieves, and onanists. Only now, 3 years after the tyrant had croaked, were the others being released, the 58ers and counter-revolutionaries and enemies of the people, whose number was too absurd, too enormous for the bosses, with their abiding fear of chaos, to free all at once. From Vorkuta they came, from Pechora and Inta, from Kolyma and Kengir and Perm. They arrived that summer moving south with the trains, like logs down a swollen river. Entire forests of people felled, bound, and piled, and now cast adrift into the rising water. A winter's cut, carried aloft with frightening rapidity. A signal blasted from the locomotive up ahead. A click and switch of iron rails brought the final filling of tea kettles. When the second wail sounded, the boy wished he hadn't heard it, then reproached himself for the cowardice of this wish. All week long he'd been failing to conjure her up in his head. Now, as he prepared to recognize his mother among the strangers rapidly streaming from the wagon, he felt swamped by despair.
"Car 9," said the man,
and let the boy walk ahead. His hair, freshly cut, fell across his forehead in a fringe that made him look younger than his 12 years. His clothes, though not new, were ironed and starched. A woman stepped off the train, her mouth frozen in an imploring smile. Her olive padded jacket reminded the boy of the one worn by the farmer who delivered potatoes to his orphanage. Her thick sweater hung over a coarse hemmed dress. The suitcase she had set down on the platform was cardboard, reinforced with metal corners, and so small he couldn't imagine it holding anything besides a few papers. The light that entered her face as she recognized him sent a twinge of nausea down his throat. She was older, of course, her face pale and puffy. Her once sculpted features were altered by an odd short haircut, parted on the side in two dove gray streaks. Only her eyes, those heavy-lidded blue eyes that had always been the striking focal point of her face, were troublesomely familiar. The man gave him a shove. She squatted and cupped her hands around Julian's face.
"Let me look at you, my precious sweet boy."
He caught the meaning of her words at the last moment. She had spoken them in English, a language he hadn't heard or uttered in almost 7 years. As if teasing, she said,
"You don't recognize me."
"Of course I do, Mama,"
he answered in Russian.
"That's all right.
I've turned into an old crow, haven't I?"
He wasn't sure how to answer this, and in a voice full of falseness said,
"Let me carry your bag, Mama."
The train was leaving. Bits of sky flashed between wagons. But where was her hair? The long, thick curls he'd buried his small face in, which he'd pictured for years in his sleep, all he'd been able to preserve of her. Their loss felt like betrayal. He held her suitcase as she approached Mark Pavlovich, the children's home director, and took his one hand in both of hers.